Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Welcome, everyone, to the Synergy Connection Show. Trey Malicote is joining us once again after a summer in New York at the Omega Institute, and I'm going to have him talk a little bit about that after this brief introduction. We're going to be talking, actually, our topic is the audacity of anger. But I want to remind everybody to please check out the Boomer products on my website. They are a promoter of the show. And you can find them at synergyconnectionradio.com. Since wellness is actually the foundation of living your best life, I want to make sure that people are aware of these products. We talk about them periodically when Bob Gilpatrick is my guest. But anybody who truly wants to have a healthy physical life, I think it begins with these type of nutritional products. So if you can click on the Boomer logo on my website, it will take you right into their website where you can explore the products and listen to the videos. And if you do decide that you'd like to order anything there, you can develop an online account and use my first name, Lucy, L-U-C-Y, in the promo code, and you'll get $5 off of your products each and every time you order. So I hope you check them out. And in the meantime, when you're not focused on physical wellness, we're going to discuss the audacity of anger today. And I want Trey to share a little bit about his experience, first of all, at Omega Institute. I got their catalog, and my goodness, they have some amazing courses that they offer up there.
It is crazy. Well, I spent a beautiful summer, and you know, over the summer months, I was introduced to some of the most brilliant speakers, concepts, energy workers, healers, and I think that just to kind of tie it all into a beautiful, just to kind of sum it all up, I think my journey at Omega was realizing that we all are infinitely powerful, that we all have beautiful gifts. And the one thing that's required for all of us is the courage to live in our truth. Mm-hmm. And what was beautiful is I learned that through seeing Pema Chodron and Eckhart Tolle and Don Miguel Ruiz.
So Ruiz, yeah.
Just some brilliant people. So anyway, the takeaway from the Omega Summer was live your truth, live your courage. And I think that leads nicely into what we're talking about, and I'm really excited to be talking about the audacity of anger. And so what I'd really like to do, Lucy, is just to begin with this idea, with a question. And that question is, how many people feel like they're more angry now than they were, say, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago? Where does that anger show up? Are you angry on the road? Are you angry with your spouse or partner? Are you angry at the political scene that we're in the middle of? Are you angry about terrorism? Or, you know, what is it that we say we are angry about? And what I'd like you to do as a listener is really fixate or distill it down. What has made you most angry of late? Mm-hmm. What's making you angry right now? And what does that anger feel like? And how do you express it? And where do you go with it? Now, you know, I got to have a side note story. Several years ago, I was leading mandated domestic violence groups for offenders. Mm-hmm. And these were men and women who, predominantly men, but men who had been domestically violent with their spouse or partner. And I sat one day and I said, by the way, they were mandated for anger control, anger management classes. Mm-hmm. And as a therapist, you know, you've been around that whole idea of anger management.
Right.
And what I realized one day as I sat with these guys, how many of you guys have an anger management problem? Every one of their hands went up. I said, oh, wow, How many of you have a job? 50, 60% of them all put their hands up. I said, how in the world do you keep your job with this anger management problem you have? Well, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I said, here's the thing. You don't have an anger management problem. You choose to use anger as a form of communication, as a form of manipulation. And so today what I want to talk about is what's underneath the anger. Why is it so, you know, why is it, what drives it? What fuels it? Why do we feel it? And my hope is that by the end of this discussion today, people will have a clear-cut understanding of, number one, where anger comes from, number two, what to do when you have those feelings of anger, and number three, how to create a life outside of anger, because anger really is a response emotion,
mm-hmm.
right?
It is.
It's something that you do when you are triggered. So let's start with that as the baseline. Fundamentally, I believe that people are created, blast upon the earth. I don't care how we got here, but we function, our normal state of functioning is to maintain equilibrium in our lives. We want a sense of safety, stability, security, and we want to know that everything is working in flow. Humans are creatures of habit. Humans are creatures of purpose. And humans also are creatures of rules. Now, what I'd like you to think about is in your own life, and I know certainly in my life, there are all sorts of rules about how people treat each other, how we communicate, how we connect in the bedroom, how we socially interact, what should happen on the political scene, what could happen here. We've got rules, piles of rules. But you know, what I really started toying with is, where do all those rules come from? But the more important question is, why do we have these rules? And I believe that we have the rules of living, those things that drive the way that we function on a regular basis, because they keep us in a sense of perceived safety, stability, and security.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll give you an example. Someone has a bad relationship experience. Somebody's mean to them. They break up with this person. And subconsciously, you establish a rule that says, in the future, I will never deal with this kind of person again. I'm going to look out for it. That's a rule, mm-hmm. right? And so then you're interacting with someone that might look or appear or seem somewhat like that person before. You get triggered, and because your rule has been broken, you then will do a series of different things, which I want to talk about in a minute, but you do something to express that angst, express that sense of, this isn't working the way it's supposed to, and I believe that's what we call anger. Anger happens when your rules of living are violated.
Okay.
And anger is an expression of misplaced emotion, right? So let's take it a step further. And what I'd like to do is back in, if we can, I want to show you some things that I've seen people do when they are angry. And as you're listening, I want you to ask yourself the same question. Do you ever do these same things when you are angry? Okay? Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. Anger management is about being aware of how you trigger and how the anger is going to sneak out every now and then.
Right.
So if we can get at what is it that you do when you're angry. And humans are very complex. So let's start with the first one. When people are angry, they attempt to assert control, right?
So talking louder above somebody.
That might be that's a practical way.
Mm-hmm.
You're loading the dishwasher. You get angry because the dishwasher's not loaded the proper way. And so you say, from this point forward, load it this way. That's an assertion of control,
mm-hmm.
right?
Or don't load it
anymore.
I'll do it.
I'll do it. Effectively, what you're saying is, you've just broken my rule and it hurt. It's bothering me too much for you to break my rule.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So we assert some control.
Uh-huh.
If somebody misses an appointment with you, don't ever let that happen again. or we become passive aggressive, or we do any number of things, right? So I want you to think about, and when I say you, I don't mean you specifically, Lucy, but people listening, think about where you assert control over people, places, experiences, things. Mm-hmm. Control in your personal life, control in your relationships, and control is insidious when you really start pulling it away. So that's the first thing I want you to think about. The second thing we do is when we are triggered by that anger, we establish some condition or expectation.
Such as?
If you are going to constantly be late, I'm not going to have sex with you at the same frequency.
Oh, okay.
In a relationship.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right.
And think about, I mean, just to go down that rabbit hole for a minute, think about the number of people you saw as a marriage and family therapist and how people use sex as a tool of manipulation.
All the time.
That is control.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm also thinking, you know, like a mom or a dad where the child has been saying, I want a dog, I want a dog, I want a dog. And then they don't water the dog, they don't feed the dog.
Yeah.
And so the comment usually is, if you're not going to take care of your dog,
right,
then we're going to give the dog away.
Right. That's a condition.
That's a condition.
That's exactly right. You know, I got to tell a funny story. I was sitting with a friend several years ago, and his nephew was with us. And he said to his nephew, Hunter, I want you to eat your full meal. And Hunter said, I'm not eating it. And what ensued was this dialogue, but it was a power dance. It was this control around expectations. And what it whittled away to is, okay, if you don't eat your meal, you're not going to get to play outside tonight. Okay, if you don't eat your meal, you're not going to get to go to Disneyland tomorrow. Okay, if and before I knew it, our whole week of fun with Hunter had been annihilated over one meal.
Wow.
Condition.
Right.
Expectation. Right. Right?
And because Hunter was not
complying. He didn't want to eat it.
Yeah. So it
it broke his rule.
So
right?
Did your whole week get destroyed?
Yeah. No. Of course, like every parent, you make those rules, you give in, and then you do your thing. So
okay.
I want you to, as you're thinking about anger, I want us to consider, where does control show up in our lives, and where do conditions and expectations show up? Because by looking at those two things, you'll see where your rules are being triggered.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, I think a third one is that we will express those expectations. We do it through judgment. We do it through condition. We do it through passive aggression. You know, people just feel that. Mm-hmm. And I think that when people are really feeling triggered, they often take on, and this is a kiss of death, they take on a victim mentality or a blaming mentality, mm-hmm. Right? So I'm a victim of what has occurred, and it's all your fault. Or I'm going to blame this, and we're seeing that on the political front right now.
Oh, absolutely.
A bunch of victimization, a bunch of blaming.
Mm-hmm.
And really, everybody's more angry than they've ever been.
Right.
Right? Right. That's because our rules have been broken. Mm-hmm. Personal, social, whatever those rules are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you want to really get at anger, you really have to look at, are you blaming? Are you taking on a victim position? Do you have conditions? Do you have expectations? Do you often feel like you are out of control? Do you start to please others? I believe that pleasing behavior is mitigating a fear. So when one pleases, they're trying to keep their world in order. They're trying to keep all their rules working. And effectively, they're trying to manage the potential for anger.
Okay,
right.
So in that particular case, I'm guessing that it would be a little bit of handling the fear more than anything else. If you have anxiety, mm-hmm. over my rules are somehow unstable here, then I will give in as opposed to escalating it to the point that anger might ensue.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think you hit the nail right on the head. What people do is they have a set of rules. Their rules get triggered or violated in some way. They either will become a victim, they'll blame, they'll set a condition, they'll have an expectation, they will judge, they will become passive aggressive, we will, or we say, wait a minute, why do I have this fear, and what do I need to do to heal that fear?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's addressing something that is usually very deep inside of a person.
Well, I'm glad you said that. So I, on the way over today, was thinking about some of the core stories, those mm-hmm. subconscious stories mm-hmm. that I think are driving cultural anger, mm-hmm. and I think drive personal anger on a foundational level.
Right.
For instance, many, many people have a core narrative that says the world is unsafe.
Right.
Right? And that is innate to our biology. We're taught that the world is unsafe, and that's how we stay alive.
Well, and look at the way a mom or a dad,
you absolutely know,
take care of a toddler. It's like, don't touch this, don't
absolutely.
Touch this, be careful here, watch out there.
Fear, fear, fear.
Exactly.
That's all that is.
Yeah.
Some people have a core narrative, a core story that says others cannot be trusted. So if you hold that belief and someone betrays your trust, the byproduct of that is going to be powerlessness or anger, right? Or just self-deprecation. There are a number of things we do, right? Mm-hmm. We have core narratives that say only the strong survive. That's fundamentally flawed, right? Because if you look at people as a body, as a species, as a collective, there are not stronger or weaker.
Mm-hmm.
We all are gifted with the same magical strength and courage, but some of us just have stories that are more pervasive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about the child that's been a victim of trauma. You know what's interesting? In my work with trauma victims, I'm sure you saw this as well. What I realized is that we often look at somebody with trauma as if they have been damaged.
Right.
But in fact, the victim of trauma actually is far more resilient than the average person.
Right, because they've gone through
it. Because they understand how to manage it.
Right.
Effectively, they faced their fear, they changed their story, they didn't allow the anger to be pervasive,
mm-hmm.
and they learned how to live differently.
Right?
Right? I believe that sometimes people have core stories, a core subconscious narrative that says, love is hard, life is difficult, don't ask for help or it will reveal weakness, people will always take advantage of you, what should I place faith in? I'm alone on the journey. I mean, when you really distill it all down,
mm-hmm.
you see these core stories that are the foundational building blocks for how we function.
You know, one of the things that I'm thinking of right now is, you know, I know you love animals and I do too. And so oftentimes our pets, you know,
mm-hmm.
our cats, our dogs, our birds, you had a squirrel
yeah.
that was your buddy. But they love unconditionally,
mm-hmm.
and that is the one way that a lot of people do cope, is they don't have to measure up, you know, as long as, and I think even animals that have been abused
mm-hmm.
still love you unconditionally.
Absolutely, yeah. You know what I find different with animals versus humans? And when you think about unconditional love, an animal, we perceive that animal to love us because we don't have any words.
Mm-hmm.
We see their actions,
mm-hmm.
we see their touch, we see their welcome at the front door,
right? Their tail wagging.
Their tail wagging. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes think to myself, if we were humans without any words, how would we manage our fear? How would we, our relationships change? How would we connect differently, right? So when you look at this idea of anger is just an expression of words. It's an expression of emotion. And so one of the tips that I would encourage when you're thinking about all this is don't say it.
You know, I'm going to bring up another little story because I don't
yeah.
know whether you saw this or not. But there, several weeks ago, this was on the news, and it was so sweet.
Uh-huh.
And it was about a little boy who's on the autism spectrum.
Right.
But he also is a Down syndrome child.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved flags,
mm-hmm.
and so his family had a flag on their front porch.
Right.
Well, there was a neighbor down the street, and they would take him on a walk every day, and
uh-huh.
he also had a flag. And this little boy would just plop down on the sidewalk and watch the flag fluttering.
Right.
And so the neighbor built him a bench for him to sit on.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's interesting that in the case of autism or even the autism spectrum, maybe
mm-hmm.
you have some verbal abilities. A lot of children that have Down syndrome, they build this loving network
mm-hmm.
on very few words.
Very few words.
And
yeah.
and so, you know, people don't have the same expectations, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, they just can relate to them at a level that says, I accept you.
Right.
You know, I love who you are.
Right.
As opposed to, what are you going to do for me?
Right. Well, and to drill that a step further, I fundamentally believe that the problems that we have among each other, those places where anger rears its ugly head, are simply there because we're not willing to look at our rules.
Mm.
Look at what that core story is. Look at why we're reacting.
Right.
Rather than, you know, and this idea that someone just says, well, I'm just an angry person, that's complete bunk.
Right.
They're choosing that as a defense.
Right. Well, they didn't come into the world as an angry baby, usually.
No.
They might be reacting to stimuli that they didn't enjoy,
mm-hmm.
you know, being stuck or probed or prodded, you
right.
know, if they had health issues.
Right.
But they don't come in angry.
No.
And yet that's something that we learn as a response to things that are going on around us.
That's exactly right. And, you know, anger becomes contagious. Because it requires I'm talking about social anger.
Mm-hmm.
It requires groupthink.
And isn't that what's going on politically right
exactly.
now?
Exactly. You want to go there? Shall we talk
Absolutely.
About that?
Absolutely. Let's go there.
Okay. Right on. Okay. So here's the thing I know. And this is, you know, it all kind of ties back in. The key is anger is a byproduct of the violation of a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally.
Fundamental rules.
Yeah. And so now I look at the political stage, and I know for me, and I'll just give you some examples. I had a brilliant conversation with my friend from Texas just last night, and he is a big supporter of the current administration, and you know me well enough to know that I'm not really, for a number of different reasons.
Right.
But I said, first of all, I want to seek to understand and then be understood. That's a Stephen Covey principle.
Yeah, and
right?
that is a wonderful principle.
Absolutely. So I was asking him, you know, what's it really like? And what I realized is that he feels far safer with the current administration.
Did he explain why?
Yeah, he's a rancher. He likes his guns. He likes no state involvement in his business. He likes, you know, and he said, why are you so anti? And I said, well, because as a gay man, my rights are at jeopardy. I don't like the misogynistic, just the vulgarity of it, you know. But what it comes down to is, with both Britt and me, it really came down to rules we have.
His rules and your rules.
His rules and my rules,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I want to know, as you think about where we are socially, politically, why do you think people are becoming more and more angry?
I think so many people feel out of control.
Exactly. And where does that come from?
Again, going back to maybe their rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear on the news on a regular basis, anybody who's listening, that constitutionally,
mm-hmm.
we have that as a foundation.
Right.
And it is being smacked around pretty good.
Uh-huh.
So I think people are becoming extremely fearful that if this administration stays in power,
mm-hmm.
how much more damage is going to be
exactly
done.
That's exactly right. Well, so let's use that as the analogy.
Mm-hmm.
If the Constitution is the American rule book.
It is the American rule book.
Right?
Yeah.
You can liken that to an individual rule book.
Exactly.
And when someone violates the Constitution, your Constitution, you're going to have the natural reaction of anger. But what lies right in the middle of that is what you just said. It's fear.
Fear.
We don't know where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. And so what happens is we begin to ruminate and we begin to project out what we think could happen.
Right.
Right. Now you see that socially, you see it politically, and that's all that CNN and ESPN, all these stations
well,
are doing.
Well, and financially, I think so
Absolutely.
Many people are terrified as to what is this doing or will do financially.
Exactly.
You talk about tariffs,
mm-hmm.
you talk about prices maybe going up as much as 25%.
I know it.
In some areas, I enjoy wine. I think
mm-hmm.
you do too.
Yep.
And I enjoy imported cheese.
Uh-huh.
And we're already hearing that that's going to be a 25% price increase.
Yeah.
Because of the tariffs. So when people are looking at things that they cannot possibly control themselves,
mm-hmm.
being out of control is very, very frightening.
It is. So let's drill that a little bit. Here's the myth that we actually have control, mm-hmm. right? What we do is we believe our sense of control in the world is predicated on things outside of us. Mm-hmm. When in fact, you know this as well as I do, our sense of safety, stability, and security lies exclusively
inside.
Within.
Right.
And so as we see an escalation of fear and a greater sense of anger, right now what I'd say, if CNN called me and said, come on, here's what I'd say. America, get acquainted with what you're afraid of. Mm-hmm. Take a big deep breath and realize that you are in control of your own constitution.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Nothing else.
You're familiar with the emotional freedom technique.
Yeah.
And so what I've been sharing with individuals is when that, you know, like hyperventilation type experience happens, you uh-huh. know, where you feel like you're breathing faster, your heart's racing a little more, you know, that's the time we have a device at Boomers, actually. That's called the Inner Balance.
Uh-huh. And, that's that meditational device,
it is.
Isn't it?
I had you try it.
Yeah, I loved it.
And but we can do something very similar, you know, with tapping this emotional freedom. Mm-hmm. Because if you're saying to yourself, and you can use just one hand, you don't have to use your whole body. Mm-hmm. But if you're saying to yourself, you know, even though I believed, mm-hmm. and maybe frame it that way,
right.
you know, I believe that our world was going to hell in a handbasket. You know, even mm-hmm. though I did believe that,
right.
I actually know that I have everything under control. Mm-hmm. You know, that I'm doing fine, that my family's doing fine. Mm-hmm. And you can begin to calm yourself down that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. You know, and I love that suggestion because it's really about going inward. It's about grounding. It's about being aware of what's coming in and what you're allowing in. It's about knowing when you flare up with some anger, going in and saying, what's being triggered? Why am I feeling like my constitution is being violated? Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to Trump, though, just for mm-hmm. sake of example. What he does when he gets angry, what's he do when he gets angry?
He tweets.
He tweets. He's like a pestilent little child.
Yes.
Right? And he calls people names and he tries to make fun of people. He's doing all of these things that are just infantile.
Well, it's the bully routine.
It is the bully routine. Mm-hmm. So, remember when we were talking earlier, I said mm-hmm. people will become, they'll become a victim or they will bully, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And he's sure as heck not going to become the victim of anything.
Not at all.
He will die before he becomes the victim.
Right.
Right? But what he's essentially doing is spewing his anger and changing society mm-hmm. one step at a time. Now, as two different people in the world, Britt and I, for example, that just because I see him that way doesn't mean that Britt has to see him that way.
Right.
And it goes back to this idea, what's your constitutional rule book? Mm-hmm. Right? How do you know when you're being triggered? How do you know how to ground, breathe, and say, I am safe, secure, happy, and loved mm-hmm. every
and
day?
I'm just looking at different scenarios here. I mean, we have this whole group of people that say climate change is a hoax. Mm-hmm. And then we have a whole group of people that go, no, all you have to do is look around and see the increasing storms.
Right.
And oh, my goodness, this year alone, we have had just outrageous things going mm-hmm. on in the United States and throughout the world. So, you know, they each, again, have their set of rules,
uh-huh.
and if you're not going to abide by my set of rules, let's say uh-huh. keep the environment safe under all cost,
right.
and then somebody over here that's saying this is just a pattern, you know, we're just happen to be in the middle of this pattern. Mm-hmm. But you could do that with probably anything in life.
Everything. In life. You know, thinking about fear in the context of society, I have a couple of questions that I ask myself, and then I think looking at fear in the context of relationships. So let's table that for a second. But, you know, I would encourage people to ask themselves, what concerns me most about the current state of society as a whole? What really concerns me? Mm-hmm. Is it that I'm afraid financially, that I think we're going to go to war, that I think we're going to, that we look foolish? You know, let's take that one. You know, lots of people say we look foolish on the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Do we really look foolish or does he look foolish?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
He looks foolish. I think the second question, how is the social instability impacting your own life right now? Because we fall prey to fear, mm-hmm. right? Climate change, and so we can hear that discussion, and if we don't keep that under wraps, then all of a sudden, here in Florida, we're going to float off out into the bay, right?
Along with California.
Yeah, and that's real personal to me. I'm close to the ocean, right? But it's trumped up on someone else's rule book,
uh-huh.
right? I think that the third question, what concerns do I have about my personal survival and my success or failure in the coming months or years, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, we're driving it. Now, of course, there are social influences, but it's not, we're the ones that hold the Constitution.
Right, and if you let your fear control your entire life, then you're going to sit home and do nothing.
That's exactly right. How about this question? Where do you think society is headed, and how will that impact you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's where your fear is. You can answer that question, we're going to hell in a handbasket. It's going to be this way. We're going to look this way. No, that's just a violation of your rules. Breathe. Mm-hmm. Just breathe. Okay? So now let's go back to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you are a marriage and family therapist, but and I know you still practice on occasion, mm-hmm. but what were the three or four biggest issues you saw with every single couple?
Communication. Fidelity.
And fidelity, what do you mean by that?
Infidelity or
someone messing around on somebody.
Right. So trust.
Okay.
Those were probably the two largest ones. Having a common set of values.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finances, probably.
Finances, yeah. But that would fall into the common set of values. Or that's where I would put it. I mean, sometimes values can be faith-based,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they can be, you know, how you spend your money.
Right.
So financial, looking at the future, you know, whether you invest in the future or play in the now.
Uh-huh.
And
so, exactly right.
Right.
Yeah. So you take those three or four things that you mm-hmm. talk about. Finances, communication, fidelity or infidelity. And what was the last one?
Trust.
Trust is predicated on communication. Communication is predicated on seeking to understand and then be understood.
Mm-hmm.
Stepping out of assumptions, stepping out of judgments, stepping out of conditions,
mm-hmm.
right? See how it all... And so what happens with the couple is they get to a point that you've seen a number of times, as have I, where they reach an impasse and one person digs their heels in and someone else digs their heels in, which sounds strangely interesting compared to our political environment right now. And what happens in that relationship when a couple reaches an impasse?
Well, it can either dissolve. It's certainly not going to improve.
No.
So, divorce.
Yeah.
Separations.
Uh-huh. But think about the insidious aspects of what happens. What have you seen couples do when they get right at that impasse? The practicals. They withhold sex.
Oh, they yell at each other.
They manipulate money. What else?
Gosh. I think a lot of times, if they have children, you know, there is a polarization.
Uh-huh. They pawn them.
Yeah.
Different
so,
directions.
You know, what did your mom say? What did your dad say? You mm-hmm. know, whose side are you on?
Right.
Friendships become an issue in uh-huh. many cases.
So they start isolating and separating and judging.
Right.
Right. What else?
Oh, golly. I know the jobs usually end up suffering, but I don't know if that's where you're going.
Well, I think it's all of that.
Yeah.
So you take that one thing, a couple at an impasse. And an impasse is nothing more than your constitution and my constitution can't exist
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm. And there's not any compromise.
No compromise. And that's what we're seeing on the political scene, too.
Exactly.
Right? So
it is like families. It's so humorous to me when uh-huh. I listen to them. It's like, oh, please. You know, your way is no better than what we've got. You know, if somebody would just come up with a solution that moves everybody in a more positive direction.
That's exactly right. But you see, in order to step out of anger
mm-hmm.
and to step out of fear, you have to have that your own constitution but you also have to be willing to look to that other human and hold them with honor and respect. So let me drive that, okay? If you saw, for instance, in a couple relationships when people would reach an impasse, almost always someone in the mix becomes passive-aggressive, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Passive-aggression is nothing more than silent anger.
Mm-hmm.
It's manipulative anger, mm-hmm. right? I'd much rather someone say, you made me mad as hell and I want to pop your head off right now. Can we work this out? As opposed to gaslighting me or setting me up for failure or humiliating me publicly or controlling me,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think this idea about how you clean all that away is you have to reach a certain point. I know this is a spiritual concept, but what I see in you, I see in me.
Right, and you have to honor that in both.
Absolutely. I'm the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
If I see something in you that I don't like, I'm the baseline. It's a violation of some rule. It's some standard that I have.
Mm-hmm.
If I see something that excites me and gives me great joy and appreciation, that's a reflection of joy and appreciation within me. So if we want to step out of anger, we must begin to look at each other on a common level, saying, I see the essence of you and I celebrate it,
mm-hmm,
as a human. And then we take that and we say, now let's figure out how to communicate. You know, Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump are two pestilent little children right now throwing barbs at each other,
mm-hmm,
right? Sit down, kids. Let's talk about this. Why does he scare you so much? Why does she scare you so much? What rule do you have, Don, that says you got to treat people this way? Nancy, what are you trying? You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm,
this sense of collaboration, conversation. And the anger is simply the byproduct of all this other stuff.
I wonder when we lost that. Or maybe our government has never had that, even back at the time that they were creating the Constitution. I don't know whether, you know, we have somehow lost our way in the ability to sit across from somebody that we don't agree with,
mm-hmm,
and find a commonality,
right,
that allows us to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't communicate, you don't have anything.
That's exactly right. And, well, you know, where I land with the political arena is that it's now no longer even a place where communication can exist. There's,
mm-hmm,
so much power and control being,
mm-hmm,
thrown about.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing politically is what you see in a really dysfunctional relationship.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So it's going to crash, or it's going to figure out how to fix itself.
Right.
But somewhere along the way, we're going to change our rules. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to us taking a mighty leap at looking at our own fear.
Yeah.
Right? Looking at our own fear. So, fear. What fear do you hold? What fear do you have about the future? What fear do you have about tomorrow? What fear are you holding right now?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that fear manifest? Are you going to retreat from it? Are you going to face it? Are you going to get angry about it?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I always go back to, and I've used this book so often with children and families, but, you know, The Little Engine That Could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had to convince herself through I Think I Can, I Think I Can.
Right.
As she went up over the top of the mountain, because otherwise she wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she would have been afraid, I'm too little, I'm not strong enough, I can't pull all of these toys into the valley for the,
mm-hmm,
children. So she had to have that attitude of I Think I Can,
right,
and then remind herself as she got there, I knew I could.
Okay.
And I think that's where families and couples and countries and things like that, Thich Nhat Hanh, I know you know.
Oh, yeah.
You.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of what he has always said is that communication, help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if I'm at the root,
mm-hmm,
of the problem, then I need to take responsibility for that by understanding.
Right.
And we're not doing that. You know, as a nation, we're just not there right now.
Well, let me go out on a rant on that, if I may. First of all, I think from a political and social standpoint, we've got the most irresponsible collective that I've ever seen.
Hmm.
No one's saying, I'm going to own my stuff. I'm going to stand on my my principles, and I'm mm-hmm. going to speak the truth. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I actually respect Donald Trump for doing that. Because mm-hmm. he is what you see is what you get. Right?
Do you remember Barbara Bush? That was her comment.
Exactly.
She said, what you see is what you get. So,
yeah.
And I think you do. You have to have that inner ability to not be concerned about what others think if you're going to succeed.
Yeah. And so, you know, what would it look like if you simply said, people can have their own beliefs. Mm-hmm. You and I believe vastly different philosophical perspectives. There are similarities, mm-hmm. and we have enough similarities that we can communicate, mm-hmm. but there are also very great differences. But herein lies what lies in the middle, though, as an example with you and I, is a deeply held respect, mm-hmm. right? And we can say the hard things, and we can honor each other, and we can do our own journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about over the last several years, over the last three or four, many times where you offered gentle guidance, mm-hmm. and that allowed me to change a story.
Right.
That's where I believe we've got to help people grow together.
Right.
Growing together. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to also think about just for a moment, just to shift for just a second, because I think we're getting close to the last few minutes here, but I think that people lose sight of the impact of the violation of their stories. So when your story is violated and you feel powerless, or you become a victim, or you start blaming, or you start having conditions and judgments, and you have all this stuff, sorry, I nearly blew it on that one, you have all this stuff you're mucking in, and it comes out as anger, effectively, I can tell you what happens. First of all, it will impact your physical health.
Absolutely.
And it is not just a little bit. It impacts, it weakens your immune system. Mm-hmm. It activates your adrenal system. It causes irritable bowel syndrome, ulcers, pain. I actually, and you know, I came out of the hospice world. I could pinpoint patients that were so angry in the world, and I would stake my career on it. Their disease came from their anger.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So I think that if anything, anger and all of this stuff also makes you age prematurely. It causes all sorts of sleeplessness, GI problems, heart problems. That in and of itself is enough reason to say, I need to look at my core stories.
Right.
But then you add the second piece of that. When people are operating in this anger place, or this violation of their constitutional rules, they are living with fear, that impairs their memory.
Mm-hmm.
We lose short-term memory, our long-term memory becomes blunted, it becomes unclear about what our next steps are, we become scattered, and it can leave a person feeling highly anxious. And I don't know about you, but as a therapist, the most anxious people I know and the most depressed people I know have a story of fear, and they often have a hidden shadow side of anger.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. They do.
Is that just me, or did you see that as well?
No, I saw that. And you know what's interesting is I was thinking as you were talking how many of my clients from, you know, days in the past were attorneys,
uh-huh.
were teachers,
mm-hmm.
were in the religious, you know, order someplace.
Right.
You know, because they were in a position of helping others.
Uh-huh.
And yet they had all of this hidden anger because many times they were never appreciated
for what they did.
Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, it's fascinating. It's so interwoven
mm-hmm.
that with anger and with fear and with anxiety, I mean, if you don't really unravel it
uh-huh.
and look at that core belief, you know, your entire lifetime
absolutely
could be led down a path that wouldn't be very enjoyable.
That's exactly, you know,
certainly
right.
not rewarding.
And your work and my work is about people, giving people abundant life, about
yes.
healthy living.
Yes.
You know, here's an interesting fact about all of the impact of fear and anger and all the stuff we're talking about. It also affects your brain processing and your reactivity.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, it will interrupt the way that our brain is translating information, which means often you might be in an environment where if you are agitated or angry or fear-based, then you'll misperceive a situation completely,
mm-hmm.
right? The clerk at the shopping mall says something and you react to that because you're misperceiving what's really happening,
right?
And that idea of being so reactive, that causes that emotional volatility. And then the emotional volatility creates a distance between you and other people. And effectively, what you have done is separated yourself from the opportunity for unconditional love.
Right. That's very, very true.
That's the trouble.
The other aspect here, and you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, the adrenal glands sit up on top of the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that we're talking about today is affecting those adrenal glands.
Absolutely.
They are constantly secreting cortisol,
mm-hmm.
which is your fight or flight,
uh-huh.
you know, response. And so if you're in a car and you're listening to some political program, you better believe that your adrenal glands are overacting, which then means the guy that's next to you that tries to pull into your lane
mm-hmm.
is going to get a different reaction than if you'd been listening to soft music.
That's right.
That's right. So a lot of what we do unintentionally to ourselves.
I think that, you know, the longer my work has continued, I really have come to believe that 90% or more of human functioning is below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we work in a mental health system. And by the way, all of this stuff we're talking about, fear and anxiety and powerlessness, that causes all sorts of mental health issues. And what I find so ironic, you look at the physical aspects of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And in America today, we have an enormous obesity problem.
Right.
Obesity is cortisol.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's unhealthy. We have enormous heart disease,
mm-hmm.
cholesterol problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can track that to our food, but I also know that there is a far stronger mind-body connection.
There is.
You know, this right. summer I went through radical change, going back to this whole Omega experience in a different world, different environment, different people. And do you know, I put on almost 20 pounds on my stomach, yet I was eating an exclusive vegetarian diet.
Hmm.
And I believe it was because of the angst, the shift and the change and changing rules and how I do things. So I think that for people that are really wanting to get healthy, I think that this idea that we're a mind-body unit, and that fear and that uncertainty and that anger is nothing more than the foundation for all sorts of problems.
Right. And that's really, I mean, when I started the radio show, I can't believe it's over a year now, but when I started it, that was the purpose, is to help people literally connect the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, the physical, and the mental, because
yeah.
there really are four very distinct
Absolutely.
Paths.
Absolutely.
And so many individuals, I mean, back when I was in Green Bay and I was actually seeing, you know, some of our Packer legends, and I realized that, you know, they were physical specimens.
Mm-hmm.
They were amazing gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of them I became friends with. But, you know, they were under all of this pressure to
mm-hmm.
perform.
Mm-hmm.
So performance anxiety was right up through the roof.
Huge.
And if they were injured, their careers were over,
mm-hmm.
you know, in many instances, because it was like, well, you know, we'll pay out the end of this year's contract, but you'll never be, you know, a professional athlete again.
Right.
And so all of the athletes, or I don't know how many people listened to the interview with Julie, Sound of Music.
Julie Andrews.
Andrews, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, when she had the surgery for the nodules that were on mm-hmm. her vocal cords, her whole career ended
yeah.
with the mistake that was made, you know, during that surgery.
Uh-huh.
And so you redefine yourself.
Uh-huh.
Some people refer to it as reinventing who
right.
you are. But we come into any aspect of our lives thinking this is who we are.
Uh-huh.
And then something shifts.
Right.
And we become something else. And talk about rules changing.
Cool.
I mean, your whole...
The whole world changes.
Your whole world changes.
Yeah.
That rule book is thrown out and you have to develop a new one based upon who you currently are.
That's exactly right.
So people that are coming back from Afghanistan, people
mm-hmm.
that have had post-traumatic stress, or I mentioned to you earlier about an individual who has a brain trauma,
mm-hmm.
and who he, you know, has been, he can't do that.
That's exactly
right now.
Right.
And so he has to figure out, who am I today if I can't do these things?
Uh-huh. I love that statement, because when you look at that one simple statement, who am I today? Mm-hmm. That is the most powerful statement of responsibility mm-hmm. and of freedom.
Mm-hmm. We have the choice.
We have the choice. You know, I've been working, you know, it's been a bit since I've seen you, but the book I'm working on now, I've got a couple that I'm working on. One's on unconditional relationships, but the most current, or the thing that's rolling in my brain a lot right now, is a guidebook for men who come out later in life, mm-hmm. post 40.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I have that experience base.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But as I've been writing and really researching, what I realized was that, and this is just for sake of example, when you're living as a straight man, and I know we could get into the weeds, did you know you were all that BS, but if you're identifying as a straight man, mm-hmm. right, and then you make a decision to change your, and it's not the choice to, you make a decision to come out. You don't decide to be gay or straight, mm-hmm, but you mm-hmm. make the decision to come out. Then you're quickly thrust into an entirely different culture with different rules, different communication, different patterns around sex, different patterns around every aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the mistake that people make is that they hold to their existing rules when they visit the new tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, in the context of a relationship, straight relationships are a little bit different than gay relationships. But if I held to that rule book that was established pre-coming out and try to apply it to my post-coming out life, then all of a sudden it's not going to work. And then I'm going to get angry. And what I find really interesting is there are a lot of people that make major life transitions in life, and they often will become angry.
Because it doesn't fit anymore.
Just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't fit. So I guess the key from my vantage point is, and that's just an example, we must, and I say that as an imperative, we must realize that we are not in a fixed reality.
And that is a good topic for, you know, a
we'll
future
do a whole
show.
One. Oh, we'll do a whole
goodness.
Show on that.
Yeah, because that's, you know, extremely difficult for people to grasp,
mm-hmm.
is that what you think is your reality mm-hmm. is very fluid, very, very
uh-huh.
fluid. And you and I have talked a lot about energy and vibrational frequencies,
mm-hmm.
and I know that not everybody that's listening, you know, has a total grasp
right.
of what that means, but, you know, our world is really more like Star Wars in
mm.
many respects than we would give it credit to be.
That's exactly right.
You know, we are very different in so many ways.
Yeah. You know, this summer a friend of mine said, you know, Trey, the most brilliant thing that you can ever understand is that if you were able to see through my eyes and I through yours, we would be on an acid trip 100 times stronger than any LSD we could get our hands on.
How interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, that is. And that's very true.
Yeah. And so that going, you know, tying a bow around all of this,
uh-huh.
your rules affect your acid trip. You know, that's probably the wrong way to say that, but you know what I mean.
Right.
And if we can get to a point where we look at each other and we say, I see the divine in you.
Uh-huh.
And the whole concept of namaste, you know, I honor the beauty within. I honor the divine within. Let's figure out a way to approach people that way. Let's get to a place where we stop worrying so much about our own sense of safety and security and accept responsibility that we create the reality every single day. And I can have a fear-based day, or
mm-hmm.
I can have a freedom-based day.
Well, and so much of it is when you swing your feet out of bed and you get ready to stand up,
uh-huh.
that decision.
Absolutely.
You know, so are you taking with you all the stuff that you went to bed with and you're still living that?
Right.
Or are you saying, no, today is a new day and I have the opportunity to see it differently.
That's exactly
to experience
right.
it differently. And, you know, if they did that in Washington or in any state government or of any...
It would all
any,
change.
It would all change. It would change in just a blink of an eye
mm-hmm.
because we would no longer see one another as adversaries, but, you know, as a cooperative venture and trying to make life a better life.
Absolutely. And I would ultimately like for us to get to the point where we can look at each other and we say, I see you. I see a reflection of me and you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, see, that's the fundamental thing people just don't get.
Yeah.
We are the baseline.
Right.
If I perceive you as attractive or unattractive, that's a rule. Mm-hmm. If I see you as successful or unsuccessful, that's a rule I hold.
Right.
Right?
And based on the values you were taught.
Absolutely.
Coming out of your family.
And here's the thing. All those rules serve as the chains of oppression that keep us imprisoned in that fixed reality.
So maybe with people that are listening to the show today,
yeah,
maybe one of the things that they can actually begin to do with this information is to sit down, you know, quietly someday and figure out what rules are governing their life.
Mm-hmm.
And are they rules that they really want to hang on to?
Yeah.
Or maybe they're not doing them any benefit anymore.
Right.
And just like we change our wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, change your thought pattern. Change
Absolutely.
Who you thought you were to who you really want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all possible.
Here's what it comes down to. I think you're exactly right. It's about creating disruption
mm-hmm.
in our own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We want to create cognitive disruption. We want to jar our subconscious into thinking differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I do, this is a really practical tip. If I say, oh, I'm so frustrated, or I am statement,
mm-hmm.
right? Then I stop and I take a breath and I say, that's an interesting perspective. How could I look at this differently? How could I explore this from a different angle? And just to move people along the journey. You know, I know you mentioned that I have a website called upsizeyoursoul.com,
mm-hmm.
but I've gotten to the point of knowledge with this stuff, and I know you have as well, by doing one powerful thing, asking a lot of questions.
Right.
It's about introspection. And so if somebody were interested in looking at where their rules are and how they're affecting them, I've got on the website 100 questions for soulful discovery. I believe that's what it says
mm-hmm.
on there. And it's all about asking yourself these 100 questions and really trying to understand why you believe the way you do. And if you answer those 100 questions, it will show you what you believe very clearly.
Right.
And then from that you say, why do I believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to believe that? And here's the power question. Does that belief serve me in my highest and greatest good?
Right. And if you can't answer yes to that, it's
then
time
it's
to reframe
wrong.
It. Yeah, it's time to reframe it, that is for sure. Yeah, I think it would be a wonderful exercise. So they can just go to Upsize
Your
Soul.
Upsize, yeah, and download it right there.
Yeah, and
yeah.
That would be a wonderful exercise for people. I know that I want to do that show on parallel realities or something like
Absolutely.
That with you in the future, because that will blow their minds if
right.
nothing else has. That definitely.
You mean the LSD trip through your eyes and mine.
Exactly, exactly. Holy cow.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to thank you again.
Lucy, I'm so honored.
You know, for
I'm
being
so
here
grateful
with me.
For your friendship and the work you do.
Oh.
Thank you for giving people like me a platform to talk about what we feel passionate about.
Well, I think we're all in this together, and we all come at it from slightly different angles, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have a foundation that's very, very similar.
Right.
So, and we can't all be Trays, and we can't all be Lucys, that's for
Nor
sure.
Nor would we want to be.
Although I'd like to see the world through your eyes once. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, again, if there are listeners out there that missed the show today because, you know, it's at a new time frame now. It's at noon on Fridays. But if you missed that show, then you can go to synergyconnectionradio.com. And all of the shows are archived there. I believe there's 6 pages of shows now. And if you just go to the show note portion of it, you can look for Trey Malicote's name or anybody else that we've had in the past. You can scroll through and find other shows that Trey did with me. And, you know, enjoy listening to them at your own leisure. It doesn't have to be, you know, at an assigned time. So, again, check out the Boomer website for health and wellness. That's important. You can't live your best life if you're physically not there. You know, the other aspects we can certainly work on, but you've got to get yourself physically and emotionally where you need to be in order to truly live your best life. So thank you for joining me.
Thanks,
Trey,
Lucy.
Again. And go out there, everybody, and please make this your very best life.